A Futures Past Editions and Deerstalker Editions audio presentation. Though inspired by characters like Doc Savage, The Saint, and Matt Helm, Charles Lee Jackson II's creation, The Emperor, developed into a unique character, which is entirely his own. The pulp magazine and action movie-inspired Emperor is a debonair hero who fights crime and supercriminals worldwide, aided by an intrepid group of friends and fellow adventurers. His exploits are told in Jackson's thrilling series of novels, The Emperor's Amazing Adventures. The first three books, The Emperor's Gambit, The Emperor Marked for Death, and The Emperor and the Masters of Disasters, are available now on sale for only 99 cents at Amazon.com for Kindle. In this last part of my conversation with Mr. Jackson, the author and illustrator describes how he decided to base the fearless group of heroes and heroines who assist the Emperor on his own circle of friends, and then he pays tribute to the movies and comic books that influenced him as a writer and storyteller.
And then you guys came along. You came along from out of nowhere.
Really, was it? I mean, you make it sound relatively soon.
It was relatively soon. It was within, say, 2 years.
Well, nicely timed then. We showed up.
Yes.
Just as you were well established and clearly the addition of more manpower on the team. Something you didn't even have to explain a whole lot.
I didn't notice it. Literally, you would think this would be so obvious to me. I didn't notice it at first. I didn't notice it until a few years ago, in fact. I read all the Saint books. I got the Saint down cold. And I read almost all the Doc Savage novels. And I didn't think about it, but in both cases, in the early ones, the hero had a whole gang with him. And then along the way, members of the group disappeared on other things. In Doc Savage's case, some of them went off to the war, to World War II, and the later writers decided to just concentrate on the two main sidekicks who were always bickering. And in the case of the Saint, he had a story where he saved, like, the crown jewels of some kingdom, and he averted a world war, and all of the countries in the League of Nations pardoned him for all of his crimes. And it's like, after that, suddenly he's not the Robin Hood of modern crime, he's the retired Robin Hood of modern crime, and he stops having a whole gang to work with. And after that, in both cases, especially in the Saint, because the Saint continues to have new adventures all the way up into the 60s, mm-hmm. He ends up being just a hero and a sidekick, a companion, or two. And occasionally, some of the guys from the old gang show up. And it's exactly what has happened with Emperor stories, because we have some of them where there you are, there's Ed, in at least two of them in the first book, there's Bob also, and Dave in the old days. But later, as the Amazing Adventures went along, it was pretty much me and Shanghai. And then when we had the big deal, and then the Emperor novel, I was like, okay, Bill and Ed come back, and we got a little gang together because we got a monumental story. And I said, did I do that on purpose, or is it just the way these things go?
So it sounds like it was powered by your environment at any given point of the process. Obviously, there was a point at which you stopped writing David in.
Yes.
And that was motivated not by choice. The gang was very solid and very regularly in each other's company, much more so during the earlier phases of it. And then as life and times diverged and people went off in different directions, we saw each other less often. Do you think that affected the direction at that point of the story?
Oh, yeah. And I think that the turning point is the beginning of Amazing Adventures. I'm starting a whole new dynasty of stories here. And for some of the stuff that I've done since then, I took characters that I had already developed but had never been published, and I pushed them up into the appropriate time frame. And in some cases, I made characters the children of characters from a previous continuity. But it was clear to me that the first issue I had, the one story where we meet the daughter of one of the characters from the old days and get her started. This is her first chance. She finds out that her dad was a costumed hero, and she decides that's what she wants to be. And so, you know, I'm starting a character from scratch here, but she's standing on the shoulders of a previous character. get people into the swing of things, I had to have an emperor story. We need to have the emperor, he's the focal point for all of what's going to happen. I was trying to decide, it had been a while since we had had any stories with the gang together at that point. And, you know, that was after the last big project was Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like CL and Bill. And although Robert was there, he wasn't being Bob. And we didn't have Dave anymore, and we didn't have Dan anymore, so we were short a little on the comedy relief. People had scattered, and I was, at the time, I had been dating Sue Potter, and then she moved to San Francisco, and we was staying in touch. She always had that kind of personality where if she had been a little tougher and been in a tougher environment, she could have been a punch-the-guy-in-the-nose kind of a girl. Always fancied herself as such. And she had a smart mouth on her, and I thought, that'd be a good counterpoint character. And I discussed it with her, and I said, hey, would you like to do this, and would you rewrite your dialogue? And she was delighted with the idea. And I said, okay, that's what we're going to do. We're going to start sort of a new phase here, because the old gang is just kind of scattered to the winds to a great extent.
What happened before you to settle down to becoming a writer, a comic illustrator?
Well, you know, as long as we've known each other, you've known me as this kind of creative guy. And the thing is that I really love creating and doing the writing and the art, and in the old days, the filmmaking. That goes back my whole life. I mean, when I was a very small child, I was hit down with a crippling problem, and I spent most of my childhood not getting around. But not going out and playing with the kids meant that I had time to sit and read and watch TV and enjoy indoor activities. So I did a lot of reading, a lot of early television watching, which was a lot of old movies at that point. My dad loved the movies of the 40s and the 30s, so when he was around, if he wasn't out back in his shop working on something, if I was wanting to watch a movie, he'd probably want to watch it too. So that was always a good experience for me.
What kind of movies? There's a different time and a different era here. The broadcast day on any television station, and you were in Southern California, right?
Yeah, I was in Glendale, so in Los Angeles area, so we had 7 stations almost from the time I started watching, and the movies would be, you know, Humphrey Bogart pictures from the 40s, the Universal monster films, comedies, war pictures. My dad really liked war pictures because he'd been in the Second World War, but he'd been in North Africa fixing airplanes, so he didn't see combat, but he liked to see what was going on. And they're very entertaining movies, and they were generally good stories. Even the cheaply made films usually have pretty good stories to them. I did, as I said, a lot of reading also. I had an encyclopedia set that I was given from my 0th birthday, and when I got to be 4 or so and could read it, I started reading through it, and I was reading a lot of comic books. Well, the problem with comic books at that point was that, you know, 1954, 55, the golden age of the superhero was gone. The characters like the Spirit and Plastic Man were, like Captain Marvel, were gone. Just at the point when I discovered some of their used comics at the barber shop or at the bookstore or something, and all I was left with were repetitious Superman stories and science fiction Batman stories and Archie and Casper, and I decided else was reading these things except me, so I just would know what the dialogue and the scene breaks were, and I just draw the cartoons. They were, you know, kind of crude. I didn't have any training in anatomy or any of the style at that point, but as I worked at it, I learned. I learned from looking at the comic pages, from looking at the art in my encyclopedia, and especially looking at the way scenes were framed in the motion pictures that I was watching, seeing how people stood in relationship to each other and how they moved. This was all very useful. And by the time I was 6 or 7, I had a whole arsenal, a whole pantheon of characters going on. Most of them were, you know, variations. The polite word, variations, homages to existing characters. I had my guy who ran really fast. I had my alien. I had my Superman. I had my Batman-type character. And they all had these complicated adventures that I liked better than the stuff I was reading. I realized later that what I was doing was I was identifying icons, because if you look across all the publishers that we have in my lifetime, DC and Marvel and the other other companies, they all have their variant. There's the guy that has the powers from the gods, there's the alien, there's the detective, there's the guy that runs really fast, there's the magician. They're always different types of characters. And much later on in my career, I would identify one of these iconic figures, and I would say, okay, how can I do something that's this icon but different and unique and make it my own, so that it's not just a copy of another character? And I had a lot of fun doing that. Now, by 1957-58, the what's now called the Silver Age of comics was getting started. The DC revived the Flash as a new character, a more scientific character than the one from the 40s had been. And they really started off, you know, using the names of their old Golden Age characters for new characters, and they had more interesting stories. But I was still making my own stories and developing the characters. I was also still watching movies a lot, and my curiosity about them, I said to myself, well, okay, how does that happen? How do we get to the final version? And I guess they call it reverse engineering now, where I would look at the result and try to figure out what the different people did, what an art director did, what a writer did, what a director did. And I was able to use this information to construct better-looking comic books and developed a big interest in the idea of making motion pictures.
This has been the final part of a three-part conversation with Charles Lee Jackson II, Maverick Underground comic book and pulp novel creator, whose first three books in the Amazing Adventures of the Emperor series are on sale now for only 99 cents for Kindle at Amazon. Don't miss The Emperor's Gambit, The Emperor Marked for Death, and The Emperor and the Masters of Disasters. Rest assured, there are more Emperor books coming soon from Deerstalker Editions and Futures Past Editions. This has been a Futures Past Editions, Deerstalker Editions audio presentation.